Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. Hope you're all having a wonderful start to your week. Today's episode is going to be different than normal. We're not going to be recapping this week's Real Houses of Potomac because, like I mentioned on the show the past couple of weeks, the schedule for Everything Iconic this week is a little bit off. Had a wedding, some travel, so all sorts of stuff going on. But I do have a brand new episode for you all with three phenomenal guests. The first two guests are Carolina Barlow and Devin Leary, who host the True Romance podcast. It's an iHeartRadio and Big Money Players Network podcast. They are phenomenal. I was a guest on their show, and they came on to do what we're calling a Bravo State of the Union. So we get into Housewives, we get into Southern Charm, we mention it all. It's a phenomenal chat. They're so funny, so fun. So I know you guys are going to love that, and we get into all the Bravo stuff. Then after that, I have an interview with Jen D'Angelo, who was the writer behind Hocus Pocus 2. Now, if you listen to my holiday podcast, I did a whole episode about Hocus Pocus 2. If you're not familiar, I have a holiday podcast with my best friend, Jenna Brister. It's called A Very Merry Iconic Podcast, where we recap holiday movies. We covered Hocus Pocus 2. You can go listen, subscribe to that podcast on your podcast feed. And then here on Everything Iconic, I was able to ask Jen D'Angelo all sorts of questions that I had about Hocus Pocus 2, about how they decided which characters to bring back and how they decided not to bring back others. And it's an interesting chat. So I'll put the timestamp in the episode description if you want to skip ahead to that. But otherwise, that will air directly after my chat with Carolina and Devin of the True Romance podcast. And then when we're back next week, we'll be covering all the stuff we missed, because I know the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion started. I got to see part one, and I did love that Activia Curtis popped out and I offered them all a pumpkin. And I mean, she said she had the biggest day in her charity's history, and then she's like, and here's a pumpkin to thank you, which made me laugh because it was like, of all things, you know, Dorit did all that promo for Hand in Yours and the Cheek Wind Chimes, and then she just got a pumpkin with her face on it. And I'm not sure, were those rotted by the time they got home? Were they real pumpkins or were they fake pumpkins? I don't know. I have so many questions about the pumpkins. That's really the main concern I had with part one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion. It was like, what was going on with them pumpkins? And I don't believe that JLC Activia Curtis was the one who got them pumpkins. I think production was like, okay, JLC, you'll give them that. And JLC, she renamed the Cheek Wind Chime after Dorit. So that was a gift in and of itself. But I just had a lot of questions about the logistics of the pumpkins. And so I don't know who got to keep them if all the gals ended up actually going home with them. But I don't know that I'd want a pumpkin with my face on it. I would want to take somebody else's pumpkin. I'd be like, give me the Garcelle pumpkin. She's stunning. I want that on my front porch. I'm not sure that I need one on my own face. But I suppose they're all narcissists. So also, oh my God. Oh my God. And then Room 23's Diana Jenkins on the Zoom. I mean, that it was a good part one of the reunion. I wasn't expecting much, especially because we started off a little slow with JLC coming out. And I thought we're not even really getting to any of the meat of the season because we're spending 10 minutes with JLC. And I love her, God bless, but I also don't need a press junket in the middle of my reunion. You know what I'm saying? Ladies, am I right? Anyway, when we get back, we'll be covering the rest of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion because I do have lots more thoughts. And for now, though, please enjoy my chat with Carolina Barlow and Devin Leary. Check out their podcast, True Romance. Find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. Also, I want to thank Acast. Pick up my book. It's called How Do I Unremember This? You can get signed copies at everythingiconic.store. And all of that said, please enjoy. I'm also doing Patreon if you want bonus episodes of this podcast, if you haven't gotten enough of me yet, which I'm sure you've all gotten way too much of your fill. But if you haven't for some reason, you can go to the Patreon page. I do bonus episodes over there, and the website is patreon.com/everythingiconic. I do one bonus episode a month where I recap Sex and the City. So without further ado, I bid you adieu. And I hope you enjoy my chat. I had so much fun with these two. So I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. First of all, how are you both doing today?
We are great. It is so exciting to be on your even you saying that you're fans of us. I don't even care if it's true or not, because it is truly like 60 milligrams of Prozac to my brain.
I feel like I'm dreaming, and I feel like my mom who listens to this podcast will never be prouder of me than she will be in the moment that she listens to this.
What's her name? Yeah. What can we learn about her?
My mom's name is Anne. She's an author. We've been watching The Housewives since season one OC, the original. She listens to your podcast religiously.
Can't go by without asking all these mom questions, because I love them.
I know.
Moms, I love the part in your book, Danny, where you talk about being a kid hanging out with your friends' moms and how she wasn't appreciated by her husband.
That was the dream of a sleepover. It was like, I just wanted to chat with the moms.
Wake up early.
Yeah.
That's what Carolina did at my house the first time she came over. I like went out of the room and came back in, and Carolina was telling my mom about her parents' divorce. So I was like, okay.
Yeah. I like to get deep. Well, the thing I think is interesting, and I feel like both you, Danny, and Devin identify with this, is that, for instance, I was at a party a while ago. When I say a while ago, I mean about 2.5 years ago, and someone's mom was there, and I just felt so tired, so didn't want to hang out with the group. They were playing dice. And so I just said, oh my gosh, look at this warm haven, which is this mother and her friend. Let me go there. This is where I'm safe. This is where I can ask questions, and they will have stories to tell me. And it was such a nice evening.
Yeah, they know where all the bodies are buried. They have the most interesting things to say. Yeah, I love a mom.
I think Housewives is basically a show about moms.
Okay, so Carolina.
Yes.
Let's start with you. What's your favorite housewife? Who do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite city?
Devin got me on Potomac. Karen Huger, I think, is just a talented performer. She's one of those people who I think she knows she knows when the camera's on her. She knows her angles. She knows what sort of shocked faces to work with. You know, Kyle Richards is someone who I think knows the camera angles by heart. And when you see her shocked faces, she knows just what beats to play for any given moment. But Karen has an element of comedy that Kyle lacks. And I think that she is just a Lucille Ball type of performer. I don't even think Karen gets embarrassed that much. Recently, Ray said, as you two probably saw on the season premiere, that he didn't like the fact that she got her boobs lifted. And what did she call her boobs? Like T and Fee?
Yeah, she named them, yeah.
She was like, I think Ray just minds that other... I don't think Ray minds looking at T and Fee. I think he doesn't want anyone else to look at T and Fee. I was like, you turned what could have been an embarrassing moment into a great tag that makes you look amazing. I just think she is really the master of that universe. But I also believe the ladies at Potomac enjoy each other's company. I do not believe that about Beverly Hills. Yeah. I don't think Garcelle wants to hang out with any of these women. She has like an actual career. I think Dory and Kyle like each other. But anyway, that's my opinion. I love Potomac because they actually do have fun together. And even when they all hate each other, Ashley makes them laugh.
Yeah, I always say the Potomacs, the franchises that are naturally funny aren't as fun to recap because they're genuinely funny. Whereas if I'm tuning into Beverly Hills, like it's pretty easy to, I hate to say making fun of, but you know, you mentioned Potomac women are genuinely having a good time with each other. And it's like, yeah, it's just fun to hang out with them. It kind of feels almost like nitpicky to recap them.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, how are you going to make fun of someone who says, you know, does a frog have a watertight asshole? They're funny.
They're actually funny.
I'm not going to make fun of Mia.
You know, I really loved, I'm skipping around a bunch, but get on the ride or get off, listeners. But you were all talking about Southern Charm season one. And I was so fascinated because it has come so far. We're now in season like 8 or 9 or something of Southern Charm. And oftentimes with reality TV shows, and I think this kind of ties back to Potomac a little bit because it's still fairly new, although we're entering season 7. But there's something that happens later on in the years where people become media trained and they're more self-conscious about what they're doing on air and on camera. And those early seasons are always the best because it's just a rawness that you get. If you look at Salt Lake City, there's a rawness there that you're not going to get with Orange County or something that's been on 100 years. And I'm curious about the Southern Charm, like going into season one, tell the listeners a little bit about your thoughts on those early years of Southern Charm.
I mean, I watched that when it originally aired. So at that era, I don't remember what year it was, but it was like my mom and I would watch
1989.
I can barely remember what it was like back then. No, but my mom and I watched everything that came on Bravo at that time. Like, we just would give it a chance. And so we watched all of season one of Southern Charm and we got bored. Like, we felt like it was funny. It was interesting, but a little bit like, okay, like, these people are just kind of a bunch of assholes and they just get drunk together. And like, Patricia is interesting. I don't know. It just felt a little bit boring. And then that finale episode, when the title card came up 9 months later, everything changed. And in that moment, like, we were hooked for life. It was like, we can never go back. This is one of the craziest things that's happened on reality television. And we got to witness it in real time. Like, it felt like a gift that did keep on giving, unfortunately for Catherine, as she continued to get involved with Thomas. But it's also like Andy was saying in the Southern Charm reunion for this season, he was asking Catherine about her journey from like season one, and she's been on for a decade from age 21 to age 31. And I've been watching from age 20 to age 30. And I just felt like, okay, we've grown up together. And I feel like Catherine is a family member now, where it's like, okay, no matter what she does, and sometimes it's hard to defend it, but no matter what she does, like, I will defend her and I can talk shit about her. But if somebody else starts to, I will lose it on them.
That's how I feel with all the housewives. Like, when they go on other shows, like, even the ones that I hate the most, if they're on Celebrity Big Brother or some shit like that, I'm like,
you mean Teddy Mellencamp, continue.
Like, I will defend them if they're somewhere else. But I will hate them and want them off the show if I'm tired.
Yes,
exactly.
That makes sense?
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. Totally. I struggle with Catherine Dennis almost on a daily basis because of, you know, there are two wolves inside of me. That old quote. And
that old quote.
God, the quote, like, good and evil are the two wolves inside of you. The one who wins is the one you feed. I have that. But with, is Catherine Dennis a villain or a hero in my story? And she gives me evidence for both. She's a survivor. And Danny, when we interviewed you on True Romance, you said something that was so interesting that I've quoted many times, which is that Bethany Frankel has given us what no one else on reality TV has ever given us, which is an incredible arc from someone who, in housewives terms, was living in poverty in a condo in New York City, to someone who, and she was one of those housewives who really, I'll never forget it, said, I'm going to be a massive success. And she manifested that for herself through hard work. So Catherine Dennis, I believe, is another story we have never seen on reality TV before, where, like Devin said, she's been on TV for a decade. We've seen her become from, as Devin described, a background actor to the star of a show. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, those ages too are such instrumental ages, 21 to 31 or whatever it's been with her. It's crazy.
Even in the reunion, I feel like you can always tell episode to episode whether you're going to get like a good version of Catherine or a bad version. And the good version is great. Like, she's just like such a great hang and funny and laughs and like, and she seems like she's really able to like make fun of herself. So like in the reunion, like, she's making fun of herself with like the grape jelly meatballs and like laughing, and they're doing all these flashbacks to her like being fun and laughing along with Austin or whatever. And then they cut back to the episode where she got in that fight with Caleb, and it's like, she's sitting there with lipstick smeared on her face. And he says something that's undeniably just like a nice thing to say, like, just nothing wrong with it that anyone could find. And she flips out at him, and it's like, okay, these two people I can't reconcile with, but yet I will.
I'm forced to.
Yeah,
I must.
Well, it's what we're asked of as an audience. And so yes, we must just figure it out. You know, I have to defend those meatballs really quickly, because there was one scene early on in the season where she did put meatballs over rice and serve it as a main dish. And it was disgusting and weird and whatever. However, the actual recipe of the grape jelly chili sauce meatballs is a Midwest classic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a staple in my family. And I think like the ingredients are maybe gross, but I swear, but my mom, Linda, has never served them over rice, like as a main dish. It's always like a toothpick appetizer, right? Like, it's an hors d'oeuvre. It's not a main dish. And so she took a lot of heat for that, but those meatballs are fucking good and addictive. And the ingredients sound disgusting together, but somehow in a crock pot, they melt together. But I do not support her putting them over rice. It's just unacceptable. That's where I draw the line.
Wait, Devin, I'm glad you cleared that up.
I've never asked you this. Who's your favorite housewife?
My mind was really reeling after that question was brought up because it's so hard for me to say. I think but then Danny, when you were talking about where we're at with Salt Lake City, it's hard because it's like the first few seasons are always the best. And I felt like this second episode of Salt Lake this season with the shaman and the cacao shaman drink and whatever.
Meredith said it. Meredith is shaman.
Shaman. Like, this is not the first time I've worked with shaman.
And no one questioned it. So I've been very critical of Whitney's, I guess, accent work or something, because she kept saying Hilling. And yeah. Apparently it's like a Utah accent that I just wasn't aware of. But she apparently says a lot of like Hilling instead of Hilling.
Yeah, I feel like she almost has a similar accent to Sheena on Vanderpump. I don't know where Sheena's from. To me, she's just screams Hollywood, but I don't know where she's originates from. But the point is that watching that episode, I felt like every single woman on this show is giving us something. Mm-hmm. There's not a single person who's just there like we have with like Beverly Hills. It's like, okay, most of the time Crystal came a couple of episodes with something, but most of the time she doesn't. And Dorit doesn't really do anything. And that's how all these franchises, I mean, Potomac's not really like that, but actually it is like Robin.
There's like a lot of dead weight on every franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people, yeah. And sometimes they take a season off and it's like the certain cast members just won't have much going on.
So I don't know. It's hard to say who my favorite is. I feel like right now my favorite is the entire cast of Salt Lake, but also I agree, Karen, Nene. I feel like Bethany and Nene both brought a new element to these shows, which is that you can become almost A-list from them. Like they both kind of had huge careers from it and were genuinely like funny and talented. But I'm rewatching season one of Real Housewives of New Jersey. And I can't help but think like the arc of Teresa is something that is incomparable.
I think we as Housewives fans sometimes don't appreciate, if you will, like the things that we've been through with some of these people. And it is like so weird to think about. And there was this excellent documentary that I recommend to people. If you ever watch MTV's The Challenge, they did a six-part documentary series recently. And I thought, like, what are they going to talk about? It was six full hours about The Challenge. And ultimately, I loved it. I thought it was so good. And what I think is so special about that show is that some of these people have been with us for three decades. And there's people that I watched on The Real World in the 90s. And the original Road Rules or something as, like, a young kid. And we're able to catch up with them. And so I think with Housewives and Bravo, one of the interesting things about going into like the era we're in now or whatever, if you want to separate it like that, but it's like we're going into this time where we've been with these people for so long. So to be with someone like Teresa, where we were in the room where she was at the delivery room, and then we were with her when she went away to prison, and then it coming back. And it's just like crazy to me to think about that. And I think that's what makes these shows so special. And I think oftentimes people compare to soap operas. And my mom like loved soap operas. She always loved All My Children, One Life to Live, like would tape them every day. And she loved it when her characters would come back or they'd weave people in and out. And I think that's what's getting good about the Housewives going long, because even though certain franchises, they get too media trained and stuff, I like having people around or weaving them back in and seeing what they're up to now. And so I think it's like a give and take, right? It's like going on too long. Like sometimes I think Southern Charm, it's like, maybe we need to put that out to pasture. Like it's gotten kind of rough. Then at the same time.
At the same time, I can't wait for Reunion Part 2. Okay. So like season one of Jersey, I do want to check back in with the Manzos and with Jacqueline. Like it was such a great world because they all knew each other. And I think that is kind of missing now from the new like iterations of these shows. It just was like half of them were related. And then Danielle was like friends with Jacqueline and Teresa was friends with Kara. It was just like all connected. And it was like a suburban melodrama. that took place. And I do want to know, like, what's it called? The Brownstone. Is that still up and running? Are they still having events there? Like, I want to know what's going on. But
I also think it would be so fun to go full circle and see Teresa make up with Caroline or Jacqueline. And I just think there could be something so beautiful about that arc if they were up for it. I don't know I think they've tried to get Caroline back, but they haven't. But they wouldn't meet her quote. You know, they don't have the money.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
she's wealthy, so that makes sense, I guess.
She said in an interview, she said they keep asking her, but she told them, like, here's the number I'll come back for. And she didn't say what it was, but I don't know where the interview was. I hope I'm not making this up, but it happened somewhere, I think.
I wonder if Denise will come back to Beverly Hills.
She's angling for it.
I think
it,
so,
right?
Too.
Yeah. She's because like I think every social media post.
I mean, let's be honest. Denise needs it.
Yeah. Do you see some of the projects Denise has been in since she left? Shocking. Just go to the IMDb page. It's like a wild ride. There was one where it was like a pirate kind of vibe. And it was like a straight to video piratey. And I was like, Denise is a pirate, or, you know, like, it's just so weird. Like, you just, when you picture pirates or olden days or like, costume period period dramas, like, you just don't imagine Denise Richards. I'm sorry, Richards. Like, no. She's just not someone who's in that in an era that's not 90s and later.
Wouldn't it be amazing though,
no Florence Pugh
on the House of Dragons, if you just see Denise Richards show up as a character, like bleach blonde or long hair? I'd finally watch that show. Yeah, I think we'll probably see a return of Denise. I'm so curious, Danny, because when we spoke to you last on our podcast, you mentioned how you once in a while DM with Trishelle from The Real World. And I'm so curious what your DMs look like.
They're wild. Trishelle, I love Trishelle. She's like very sweet and she's someone who I feel like is a reality TV star. Like I think actually people don't give Trishelle enough credit for what she's done for the reality TV arts. And a lot of those Real World people, I mean, they were bringing us content in a different kind of way than they do now. And they were so unapologetically themselves without all the promise of Instagram fame. And so it's like Trishelle was doing all that for nothing. Like, she wasn't getting paid a lot of money. Nowadays on The Bachelor world, they know that if they have a moment or something, it's going to translate to followers. And then that translates to their sponsorships with Instagram, which is tons of lucrative money.
Yeah.
But Trishelle was just going on TV for dollars and giving us
a condo
TV
in Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so the DMs are interesting. I always get skittish when people message me stuff about these shows because I never know who's telling me the truth. Cause sometimes if housewives are feuding while they're filming, they'll like try to reach out to podcasters and bloggers and stuff like that. And I can see through it all. Like I mentioned with Beverly Hills, they're so media trained that it's like, I know what they're doing.
I love when they say it's on the blogs. It's all over the blogs.
Yeah. It's all over the blogs. Like, you put it there, or like you were messaging people to get it up there.
Yeah. I wouldn't even know where to do that.
Right. Like, that was crazy to me. Like, what do you mean you don't know how to do that? Even if you're in Beverly Hills, like, you are aware of how media works. Like, you're not a big dummy. I mean, just the idea of that, them not knowing how it works. It's like, you all know how it works. Don't be stupid. We know you're not stupid.
The only person who I don't know if she would know how it works without a professional holding her hand is Kathy Hilton, given True. That she reached out to her husband, Rick, via Instagram comment.
I see. I do actually think like Kathy's also more calculated than she lets on. She knows. I think she's smart too. And I think just judging Paris, I think Paris has kind of made the game and knew what she was doing from a very young age. I don't know. I just don't trust any of them. Like, that's where I get in my conspiracy theory zone, because I'm like, I don't trust any of you people, especially Beverly Hills. Like, the other franchise you mentioned, Karen Huger, it's like, I don't think Karen is as savvy about things. I do think Karen's a little savvy.
I mean, when you have a creative director, you definitely know how to reach out to Page Six.
Yeah. And the truth is, like, the Salt Lake City women.
I was talking to a friend about Whitney and just about, she is not in a bad way, but like almost so naive and so not savvy that she's giving us like a storyline beyond our wildest dreams, because she just immediately goes to Cameron and is like, this is what's going on. Like, you know, and immediately like sobbing to her husband. And it's like a very real scene, because I don't think she stops and thinks like, well, do I want to talk about this on national television yet? I don't know. Or like at dinner, I don't think she stops and thinks like, should I bring this up now? Like, I think she just goes.
Devin, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm so glad you said this, because I've been critical of Whitney Wild Rose, because for a while it was feeling like she was doing storylines that she thought should be a storyline. For instance, with the husband and the paint, when they were doing that sexual scene or whatever.
That was tough. Yeah.
But I'm actually maybe starting to come around to kind of what you were saying, because I ultimately think if somebody was so savvy, they would know to stay away from those storylines.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm having that aha moment with your point of like, she probably is so unsavvy about it all that that's why she's giving us these storylines that feel fake and rehearsed. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. And I have to credit my friend Haley who pointed that out to me, because I was kind of like, why is she like talking about this immediately on TV? And also, though, I have to say, Whitney is a burgeoning star, and I don't know what's going to happen. Wow. I don't know what's going to happen. First.
I was on the edge of my seat that whole sentence too, by the way.
Sorry.
Edge of my fucking seat.
I was realizing as I said it, I'm like, it might sound like I'm saying something more controversial, but I feel like she's like the next Kyle Richards, because first of all, her husband, I feel like truly, I look up to I was telling my friend Haley this, like, that's like my goal relationship, like someone who loves her so unconditionally. I feel like she had a tough growing up, and then she found home in this man in the workplace and under not so great circumstances, but she found home in him. He'll support her no matter what. He clearly like thinks the world of her. I think she seems like a great mom. She loves her kids. She has cute interactions with them. And so she's like relatable and real, but also not afraid to start drama, not afraid to be clearly in the drama. She gives us crazy looks. She posts really bizarre reels on her Instagram. Like, she has everything that I need in a housewife. And I feel worried for her and Heather's falling out. It's kind of like,
you lost me.
I'm scared about it, because I also hear it goes into like Ultimate Girls Trip, because they went on that season together.
Oh my God. I don't think they've made that season.
I don't think the two of them are made up yet. I think that's still going on. But the Salt Lake City Women, to me, like, if people aren't listening to or watching Salt Lake City Women, it's like the best TV. And I feel so sorry good for people who aren't on board with that, because it's so good.
I mean, Meredith coming late to the cacao ceremony and then immediately sitting down and starting sobbing was gold. And then Lisa sobbing about her abandonment because she like did her sister's hair growing up.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
It was giving so much. And then
Whitney's sharing about abuse.
Well, yeah, Whitney's like, I just realized one of the worst things that could ever happen to someone happened to me. And Lisa's like, I did my sister's hair growing up.
You don't understand. I was braiding my sister's hair.
But also,
or that one story she told about being left at the playground or whatever.
That
it's like Whitney's talking about real abuse, and Lisa's like, and then they left me at the slide. I didn't.
She also had the energy of like, you don't even want to know how dark my stuff goes.
I went to the counter.
She's like, I wish I could block it out.
Yeah, you should. Also, I should be so lucky.
But Danny, you played all their taglines on your recap of the premiere. And even the taglines this season are the first one, I think, is Jen saying, I'm fighting for my life, not your approval. It's like,
fighting for, you know, 9 approvals.
I want to talk to you both about Jen Shah, because I do get, you've asked me about my DMs, and I do get DMs about the Jen Shah thing, because I maybe sometimes am not as hard on Jen as I would be on Bamboozle Jane over in Beverly Hills. And I don't blame myself for that, because I actually am of the opinion that Bravo is presenting Jen in a different way. And so I'm following their lead. We're always following Bravo's lead. And I think Bravo is editing and showing her in a different light than they do Erica Jane. Mm. And so I think the viewing audience is saying, yeah, Jen's coming across as easy, breezy, beautiful, and Erica is not. That's what they're showing us. But am I completely off base with that?
No,
Erica is not doing herself any favors by referring to a trigger warning that is the word that starts with V as in victims. She was like, oh, yeah, you know my trigger word. It's V. I was like, you mean you're upset? <It's me. laughs> I took me a second. I was like, V, 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 V. Oh, my gosh. Plane crash victims? That's going to get you upset. Well, Jen Shaw, when she's talking about her sons being scared of her going, that wrecks me. Like, that actually makes me upset. And Erica, I just don't feel as bad when she's telling Crystal, like, oh, here's my rental house in Beverly Hills that's $10,000 a month. Girl, it's not beautiful at all. That's not eliciting any sympathy from me.
Yeah. Well, and I think there is a big, oh, I'm sorry, Devin, but I think there also is a big difference between where Jen actually did these crimes and Erica did not, but they are presented in a different way.
Well, it's funny because I think, okay, so like, I think that we watched it all play out last season, the power of Jen Shaw. I think she's genuinely like a narcissist in the way that she is, in the way that like Jack Nicholson probably is. Like, she's like really charming. So like last season we saw all the, like, Heather, and she like did horrible things to Meredith and like liked comments that were like slurs against Meredith's son. Meredith's
sissy
son.
Bitch. Yes. Call him a sissy
like
bitch.
Homophobic. And she does these things, and then she gets in these conversations with these women. And by the end of it, they're like, let's get a drink. Cause she is like, she has this like charm. She's charming. And it's really something that Erica lacks from season one. Mm-hmm. When she came in season one, we were all kind of like, I think like, okay, why is she so cold and weird? And then eventually we were like, oh, she's like this, she has this persona and that's cool. But Jen has like this down to earth seeming charm and quality. But it is so funny because it's like, on Beverly Hills, like every single episode is like a different way to who's going to like Sutton literally said, like, I'm going to check out this round of like confronting Erica about like her sins of being married to someone who committed crimes. Whereas premiere of Salt Lake, they're like, well, so Jen, because of her federal scam that actually harmed millions of elderly people, she actually can't leave the country. So let's go to Arizona because like it's her last weekend before New York. And she's like, ladies, like, thank you so much for this trip. It's so, and they're like, oh, Jen, okay. And I think
you get the main bedroom because you need, yes, like,
I was, that's
like,
the wait, craziest what? Fucking thing that they're just like, yeah, you get to choose the best bedroom.
Because you have trouble sleeping at night because you've defrauded the elderly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so fucking crazy. But the supporting cast on Salt Lake, I do think that influences us as an audience as well, because we're hearing Heather Gay, who's seemingly down to earth, normal person.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, well, she fucked up and she's my friend. And, you know, I don't think it's good what she did, but whatever, I'm over it.
Yeah.
Whereas on Beverly Hills, like, I don't think they do. Kyle's just like, you know, she's scared. They're, yes, kind of in the middle. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even Erica's friends are kind of in the middle because they're afraid of how they're going to look. Whereas on Salt Lake City, Heather's like, I don't fucking care how I look.
Yeah.
I know I look nuts sticking up for Jen Shaw, but I'm going to do it anywhere. Instead,
exactly,
of Kyle Richards, like, well, I don't know why Erica had to say
don't
it that.
Don't say
way.
That because you're my friend and I can't stand by you saying,
yes,
that.
While Erica's like, I don't care. I only care about me. And Lisa's like, we've got to get her out of here.
Yeah, it's, you know what, it's like Amanda Knox. That's what I was trying to think of, because it's like okay, Amanda Knox with Erica Jane, it's like Amanda Knox was innocent, but she was just unlikable
and cartwheels.
And yeah, even in the documentary, like, I was like, okay, you're amazing advocate for like innocence and the justice system, but also like you're really annoying and weird. And that's how I feel with Erica, is like, I'm like, I don't want to believe you. Like, it turns out you once you like show your true colors, you are loud and grating and rude and don't care about anyone but yourself. And I don't think Jen cares about anyone but herself, but she's really good at pretending she does. And she's funny. And I don't know.
I really think it comes down to Heather Gay, because I just really love Heather Gay. So I'm like, well, if Heather Gay can like this person, then like,
true,
I'm sure
true.
I can too.
It's so interesting with Jen Shaw's Botox. It's really it unsettles me because her personality really lives behind her eyes. And as you know, they can get glaring. And one thing that I just thought of her from season one is I thought, oh, there is a screw loose with this person. Even before, you know, her crimes were made public, her lashing out at her husband's birthday party. It yes, seems like what we, like what Beverly Hills probably got from Kathy Hilton in private, we get from Jen Shaw in public. And it does not seem like you guys said, it does not seem for entertainment. This actually does seem like she just loses it once in a while.
By the way, I just want to say that we're on a roller coaster with the women. And so I have had episodes where I like started to like Erica Jane in the middle there. Yeah. There was like a couple weeks where I was like, oh, I think I kind of am on this person's side.
And when then, go ahead.
Then she lost me again.
When she told Sutton, when Sutton said, do you feel responsible? And Erica Jane said, does the wife of a doctor feel responsible for his dead patients? I did take a second there. I was brought to the light. Maybe, you know, it's not her fault, but she loses me with the earrings as she lost us all. She has, in fact, in the season finale, she says something like, isn't it interesting? I can take responsibility for what I've done, but no one else can. I was like, Erica, you don't take responsibility for anything.
Right. Every time they confront her about anything, she gets so upset.
Well, I think she could take a page of advice from this podcast if she listens, because I think she's choosing wrong people. I hope she doesn't, but if she does, she's choosing the wrong people. And like Heather Gay reflecting on Jen as making her look better, like, I think if Erica really committed to like mending things with Sutton, trying to get through to Garcelle, like she really needed to bridge that gap and she wasn't able to. So in the end, she's left with Rinna, and that's like the worst possible look you can have. So
she just needs someone sympathetic on her side. And I just don't know that enough of the Beverly Hills women are that. So I don't even know who she gathers. Like, I think it'd be a tough go with any of them, because it's none of them seem as nice as like a Heather Gay to me.
I have a question for both of you, because you two have such longer experiences with these ladies than I do. There is so much hate for Lisa Rinna on Twitter. Yes. On Instagram, there's so many memes, tweets about her leaving the show and how they want her to leave the show. Is it because, as Kathy Hilton said, she's Hollywood's biggest bully? Which I was like, that's an honor to think that Lisa has any standing in like show business. But why?
Well, she did have a guest arc on Entourage season 5, so you know, I wouldn't
by my time. Far. What is the source of this? Just that she's a quote unquote annoying.
I think she's run off a lot of people on the show. I think Kim Richards and Eden Sassoon and Denise Richards. And I think she's given us such great TV. Mm-hmm. And I think she really looks at the job of like as a drama driven reality show. And so I think that's just what she goes into it. I don't think she's really friends, like you mentioned earlier, with any of these people. Ultimately, she looks at it more of a job and a paycheck, like she would the Melrose Place reboot that she tried to get on. So I think that has part of it to do with the fan bases. And Lisa Vanderpump, she also kind of...
Right.
She ran a lot of these people off the show. And I think I really liked it, that style of whatever she was giving on the show for a few seasons. And I think it's starting to get a little tired, and it's like, so expected now that we just, I think, want a different flavor from her. And so I'm of the opinion that she should definitely be put on pause, but then like come back to us.
Right.
And see if it works a couple of years down the line. I don't know. Devin, what do you think?
I think so. Carolina and I have a friend, Chelsea Connors. And I think the season before Tom Girardi's downfall, I texted Chelsea and said, Erica's kind of bothering me this season. And she said, she's flying too close to the sun, which I think is the perfect way to phrase it. Because at that time it was like, okay, so Erica had like this boom of popularity. Everyone suddenly like the Pretty Mess book and everything. And she was like the relatable one and the normal one. And she started a career in her 40s as a pop star, and she's like iconic. And then that all got to her head. I think the same thing happened with Lisa Rinna, where like she started out as like, I'm the like down to earth. I'll do anything. I'll do diaper commercials, whatever. And like me and Harry and everybody, she danced at Andy's baby shower. Everybody loved her. And then it went straight to her head. And I think she knows she doesn't have, on the one hand, I think if she had gone harder towards the like, I'm going to do the down to earth storylines, I'm going to do the stuff with my mom, I mean, rest in peace, the stuff with her family and Harry, I think if she went harder into that instead of like being like, I'm the iconic, I'm the star, I'm listening to me, whatever. And then she got threatened because Denise was like becoming the new favorite. So she tried to put like she seemed so desperate.
I think, even though I don't think Kathy was innocent and everything, I do think a majority of the issue was that she was becoming the fan favorite. And so they were just, and I think that's translating of like, yeah, maybe Kathy did these things, but also you're all just too excited about it. Like you're leaning into it too hard. And yeah, when she first started the show, it was, the whole thing was like Brandi Glanville was making fun of the haircut that she had for 100 years. And now she leans into the glam the way that Dorit and Erica did. And I know the show has evolved and stuff like that with glam, but I think we're missing part of that kind of down to earth Rinna. Mm-hmm. And that all translates. I think the big headedness translates to screen. I think we're seeing that just to tie it back to Southern Charm, because Craig at the reunion, Leva had said, like Craig said, he was the biggest star in Bravo, and he was talking about his Q score.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm not giving anything away, but I got a chance to see the like Winter House premiere, and there's like a thing that comes up that people, I don't want to spoil, but it's like, you could feel the big headedness coming through. Even sometimes when it's not as apparent, you can feel it through the screen.
Yep.
And I think that audiences respond to that.
I do think Craig is an alcoholic who needs to get sober. I mean, I would say the majority of the Southern, I would love to watch an episode of Southern Charm where everyone goes to rehab. And I think that is like a way to keep the series fresh. But that's a really interesting interpretation of Rinna. I think I've never heard anyone make an excuse for gossiping like she did at the finale, where she said that if she doesn't talk about what happened with Kathy, she'll get cancer. She's like, I can't keep this down. If I don't talk about this, I will suffer. I will get cancer.
Craziness. Like
the way that cancer has suffered on the channel of Bravo. The way that cancer gets thrown around left and right.
Hasn't
you were talking about
enough?
the Kim Zolciak fake cancer moment. Now we have Mia talking about, like, did you have cancer? Did you not? Like the
Vicky
way
cancer
this,
scam.
The hashtag kill all cancer, one of the best things that's ever happened. I mean, multiple cancer scams with Vicky, like Brooks is cancer and then kill all cancer. And, you know, I just think cancer is serious. And
it's a good diagnosis of cancer.
It shouldn't be just like fodder for the reality stars, like when they don't have a storyline going into the season. Like, let's fuck around with cancer.
Leah saying that her friend was like, put it on. You need to put it on Instagram. Like, be real.
You need to share your highlights and your lowlights. Like,
and then, Mia, what did she say? She's like, I don't need attention. It's like, anyone who's on this show needs attention. Like, that's why you're on this program.
I also went on a deep dive on Denise Richards' husband, Big Dick Aaron's Instagram account once. And speaking of cancer scams, you know, he obviously has people like sleep with like pebbles under their pillow and stuff as a part of a treatment center he runs.
And I missed that sort of like, wow, that weirdness that was with him.
That
Big
was
Dick
good,
Aaron
yeah.
and Denise, like all of that was so, I felt like we only barely scratched the surface of that.
Oh, totally. When Big Pharma was following him.
Yeah, and it's like, we just went past it and never dove back in. And like, what the fuck? I just need her back for that.
I need that. Yeah.
But someone was commenting about, she posted, I think, in response to all the housewives being like, he's a fucking quack. She commented about how she loved what he did and she was fascinated. She was learning so much. And someone commented, you know, does Aaron's treatment work on cancer survivors? And she, of course, responded like, a lot of people have been seeing results. I was like, Denise, why are you doing this?
Did you see
why?
This isn't really related to Big Dick Aaron, but did you see when she was hawking the Bible app? It was just
no, I didn't see that.
It was, there's some app, and forgive me, I don't mean to be sacrilegious, but I just thought it was funny that it was like Denise behind like a heavy Instagram filter.
Yeah.
Saying download this Bible app. And I was like, there's no, I'm sorry. I just didn't, I can't imagine Denise. Like she was like, I wake up in the morning and I do my Bible verses. And I was Denise, I didn't believe this.
Denise, you wore a romper to your wedding. I just don't think so.
I love her.
I mean, I love her. And I still stand by, like, this is the type of support that these women get and these men get in their partnerships on Bravo. Like, that is what I aspire towards. Cause again, it's like, okay, that's harmful that she's supporting him, but she is supporting her man. And it's like when Ken was defending Lisa Vanderpump, like no matter what, and he's confronting Kyle, and it's like, okay,
holding the dog the whole time.
That might be toxic,
goodbye,
but
Kyle.
I also, yeah. But I also really like, I aspire to that.
Yeah. I don't like Mauricio. I don't like when the men get involved. Like, it bothers me when they're in there. I'm like, just get out of here. Even Peter Thomas on Potomac, I'm like, Peter, I thought we were rid of you.
Yeah.
Back. I mean, I like the crossover aspect of it, but.
But wait, who cares?
Can I just ask you, we were talking a little bit about Winterhouse and that, and I try as I might, I can't get on board because I feel like the people are my age, and yeah. I just, there's a darkness to the drinking that,
oh my gosh,
I don't want to be judgmental, but like, I watch it and it makes me like, I get a physical reaction of like, I don't know.
Watching Craig play beer pong
with the women on Housewives, like on New York, they get way drunker than that.
They're
not
like,
playing like college age sports though. Yeah, like okay. Drinking games when you're in.
They've earned the right to drink that way. I think that's the difference. Yes. Okay. They've earned the right to be that way, and it's different than like just a bunch of, I guess, mid to late 30s men. Also, like, I think it bothers me that, like you said, that they get big heads about it. And that, I think you mentioned, Danny, on another episode of your podcast that like Amanda wanted to be considered for like the Real Housewives of New York reboot. And it's like, no, stay in your lane. Like, just, you're not on their level. You're a sideshow. It's like below deck, actually lower than Below Deck, I would say, even because Below Deck has their own following.
You're like the sailing yacht. Like, you're the, or the one on Peacock, which I'm sure is great, but it's not
on the main network. Tier. But I do still watch it because I do think that Kyle and Amanda's relationship is fascinating in a way that's like, this is something I don't aspire towards. And like, it's tragic, but also like, you know, they're both toxic in their own ways. So I love watching that. I guess I'm interested in watching Paige and Craig because it's like an interesting crossover, but I think she's so much better than him. And I wish she could see that. So that's frustrating. I think they're all so much better than the men on these shows, although I like Jason, but so yeah. I don't know.
I am happy for Lindsay and Carl. What I'll say is that it's so interesting when you bring up Road Rules and the challenge, Real World, because that was my bread and butter when I was, ages 13 to 16, I want to say. Just really looked forward to it. This was before, obviously, you could DVR anything. So I remember the feeling of it being on, me catching it when my mom wasn't home because she didn't like when I watched The Real World. I think that Summer House and Winter House give me the feel of The Real World. Because it is essentially just them hanging out in a house together and learning how to live amongst each other and who's hooking up and what does that mean. But we also get to see them in their home life, which is another exciting point. I agree with Devin. I'm actually very interested to see what Paige and Craig's relationship looks like, because I think Paige is a lot smarter. Talk about savvy. I think she's a lot savvier than Craig. So you'll see on Summer House that he embarrasses her sometimes, or drunkenly yelled at her about how Lindsay was a loser because she told Paige that he was having sex with Kristen Cavallari. I could see Paige cringe. Like, you know, you're not behaving well. And so Paige, I wonder how self-aware. Long. Exactly. Yeah.
I do have to say, I saw Craig in person once, and like, way more stunning in person. Like, he was a very good looking man in person. He's very tall, which I don't think you could tell on Southern Charm because those other guys are tall. But yeah, I think I want more for Paige. I also just think there's something about, whereas watching the housewives get drunk, I feel like they've earned it towards, not that they're at the end of their lives, but I don't know.
They're in their golden years.
Even to bring it to the challenge, I think I don't mind when they get drunk because I feel like they earned it because they're competing.
Yeah.
And there's something about like Winter House where they're just in a house. Alcohol.
Yes.
I do not like it when they dance because it seems so clearly for the camera. Like I don't know, like watching Sierra and Austin grind when they first met, I was like, who is this for?
Yeah.
It's also like, they're the people that you would get so annoyed by on the street. Like when Kyle like goes into that person's backyard as a full adult man and like sits on their mailbox or something, I'm like, these people you would walk by and be like, shut the fuck up. Like, oh my God, like these would be your neighbors that you complain about. So I think that's the thing.
And Kyle's mullet wig, if I was Amanda, I would absolutely take that and burn it. I would be like, you can never wear this again.
It's not a joke. It's not comedy to just put a different hairstyle on.
We've leaned into it too much. And I feel the same way about that feckin' bunny. It's funny. Yeah. We're going a little too hard and we just need to scale it back just a tad. Just a tad. It's like the mullet wig. Let's scale it back. Let the audience tell you we want more of it.
Yes. Like,
don't just give it more of us. Give it.
Don't force it on us. Yes.
Yeah. Like, let us say, where's that mullet wig? I miss when you used to put on that fucking mullet wig. Like, let us get to that point. Yeah, but instead it's like we're getting it before we're even asking for it. And that's how I feel about that bunny. It's like they show it to me every 5 fucking seconds. And like, I just want to miss it for a minute.
Let me enjoy the memory. Yeah.
You guys, I had like 100 topics to talk about and we just talked for almost an hour. We didn't get to any of my list. Real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Real quick. Just let me get your a couple thoughts on Selling the OC. I know.
I watched.
Devin, you take okay. this one.
Yeah, Devin, go ahead.
My one main thought, first of all, the thing about tables is that they do turn.
They do.
Is true for this season. I watched it and I was like, whose side am I on? Whose side am I on? The tables turned. I don't remember any of their names, in fact. But I ended up being with the two on the side of the two blonde women.
They all had the same name. What was their
name?
Yeah.
They were like Alex or Ashley or something. Alex?
No, maybe. See, now I already forgot. I did a whole episode on them and I can't even remember.
I know they're gone from Alex. My mind, but those two blondes, I ended up siding with them in the end. But my main thought is I'm happy for Brittany Snow. She deserves so much better. I don't know how that little boy got, well, I do know how, because that's just the way of the world, but yeah, I'm just happy for her that she's free of him.
They're all Alex's. I just looked it up. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm happy about Brittany Snow as well. Okay. Magic Mike. Double XL. I know you talked about this on your show. So I always like to talk about Channing Tatum specifically, who I know you both have strong feelings about. And mm-hmm. I think he's the biggest gem in Hollywood. I love him.
I do too.
I think he's rare in that he's multi-talented. He can dance, he can act, and he can be funny and self-aware. Mm. He makes jokes about himself. He appears as himself at like in that This Is the End. Is that where he like did that? Mm. Yeah. So he has a sense of humor about himself. He's not afraid to lean into what people love. Like you said, like people loved Magic Mike XXL was everything we loved about Magic Mike, the original, without any of like the darkness or trying to be good, basically. And he leaned into that. He gave us everything we wanted and needed. I do feel like such a weird mix of emotions when I see pictures of him with Zoe Kravitz, mm-hmm. because on the one hand, like they're both so stunning and they deserve each other. But on the other hand, I could not possibly be more jealous.
I love him so much. I have shared this story multiple times on our own podcast, so I feel embarrassed to share it again.
No, but
I
share it again, please.
Once see him when I was 16 years old and wasted at the premiere of Pineapple Express. I went up to him. He was only known for Step Up, and he was there with Jenna Dewan, his girlfriend at the time. And I started quoting lines from Step Up and they would quote them back to me. And then I said, will you dance with me? And he said, oh yeah. And then I ran into him later in the night and he immediately just stepped up and did a dance in front of me. And I thought in retrospect, how annoying to have someone when you probably have aspirations that are, you know, past Step Up, the movie you just did, to have a teenager come up to you when she is illegally inebriated and quote lines to your movie. And him and his wife were so, girlfriend, were so charming about it. He ended up smoking hookah with my friend and catching up with him. And he wasn't a huge star, but it's so indicative of a personality like that, where he was in a public place. I have also tried to approach celebrities at, you know, Devin and I famously tried to approach Amy Schumer once, and she denied a request to say hi to us. At another premiere, because I always feel like premieres are a safe space to try to say hi to a celebrity. And to some people, like the Amy Schumers of this world, they're not.
They're on the clock at a premiere.
That's what I think. That's what I think. Yeah.
He seems like such a gem. And I just love he also, you said Triple Threat, and I just want to mention he also sings, because I saw opening night of Bigfoot, an animated film, which was surprisingly a musical. My friend Jenna and I went with some cocktails and and we didn't know that it was a musical. And suddenly Channing as an abominable snowman was singing. And so that was a surprise. Also, I want to say Step Up, because you mentioned it. It was the first movie I ever bought on. Do you remember when iTunes started, when they first had movies? It was the first one, and I was like dating a girl at the time, and I made her watch Step, like we had a date. And I made her watch Step Up with me, which is like, okay, girl.
And but she's lucky because she got to watch that, you know?
Yeah, I was like, oh, I got Step Up on like iTunes. On like, iTunes. You should watch it. And I was like, how gay of me. Anyway, I can't wait for the new Magic Mike. They just announced it's going to theaters, which I'm thrilled about because that's where that
need kind to of see thing in person. Be seen.
He has the best butt in Hollywood.
Yep.
I love you both. I'm sorry I took up so much of your time.
Are you kidding
no,
me?
No, this was the best time of my life.
This felt like the opposite of work. I would have paid to be on your podcast.
I would pay $100.
My absolute pleasure. Tell all the listeners about your podcast, where they can listen, where they can find you both, and all that good stuff.
We have a podcast called True Romance where we talk about relationships, breakups, public relationships, our private relationships, and everything in between. We focus a lot on the reality TV, what is under the reality TV umbrella. You can find True Romance with Carolina Barlow and Devin Leary on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts. We have an episode come out every Thursday, and you can find me on Instagram at Carolina Rose Barlow.
Yes, and also just to note, we're covering Bachelor in Paradise right now, so that's what listeners can look forward to.
And there's a lot of crossover. People like Everything Iconic listeners like the Bachelor world, and I don't always cover it. So everyone, check out True Romance.
Yeah.
Well, the Housewives give us bounty. You know, there's moments you search for in the Bachelor world. You look for the authentic relationships.
I had so many relationship questions I wanted to ask you both, and we never got to any of them. Favorite
you
rom-com.
Have to have us on again.
Favorite rom-com.
Oh, favorite rom-com. I mean, it's anything Nora Ephron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say When Harry Met Sally.
Classic. Favorite Mariah Carey song and Sexiest Man Alive. Last question before I let you go.
I will say Vision of Love, even though Emotions, Drake just got me back into. What about you, Devin?
Touch My Body or Obsessed.
Mm. And Sexiest Man Alive for People Mags.
This is really hard.
I have to say Channing. I'm sorry.
No apologies.
I know we already. It's kind of cheap because we already talked about him, but.
I'm really watching a great show called Bad Sisters.
So fucking good on Apple.
Apple. The male romantic lead is upsettingly attractive. I honestly have a hard time focusing because like Devin was explaining with Channing and Zoe, I'm too jealous to fully hear the story and the lines that people are saying sometimes. I just can't stop thinking about how if this world was just, like, I would get to meet him in person. So it's hard, you know. Yeah. It's hard when you are a girl recognizing the sexiest man alive.
I love you both. You'll come back, and I'm going to ask you about
Will Ferrell. We love you.
Because, Carolina, you did the Ron Burgundy podcast, which was so funny, and
I just have to say, Danny, you are such a special person and such a special personality, and I have turned so many people on to you who wouldn't have found you otherwise because they're not as immersed in pop culture like my parents. My dad, it's so cute when I go to your Instagram account, my dad has already liked some of like the memes that you create, which I just find so amazing.
I have all of your memes saved in a file on my Instagram because they're the best of all time.
I was dating someone and I was watching your Instagram story, an old one, and laughing, which was the Lady Gaga, the meme that you made of the Chipotle woman when she sees me leaving with a free refill of soda. And it's Lady Gaga saying, "Girl, where do you think you're going?" And this might be hard to translate over a podcast, but I'll say that my boyfriend at the time just calmly said, "What was that?" And then saying that for the rest of a trip we were on, just randomly walking around.
Lady Gaga has given us so many moments.
She has.
I think you have, you take in so much reality TV, but you do not apply cynicism to it, you know, strangely. You're such a pure heart. And one of the things I love about Devin is that she is such a true fan and she doesn't look for things through any filter but her own in terms of how does she feel about it. And I feel like the same way about you.
One more hour. Okay.
I know. I gotta let you go. I've kept you way too long. I love you both. You'll come back and we'll schedule it for 2 hours. I'm here with the writer of Hocus Pocus 2, Jen DeAngelo. Jen, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here.
I imagine it must have been really stressful to have this movie come out because the original has so many intense fans, myself included. I love the original. I grew up watching it a million times on the Disney Channel and really became something that was surprising throughout the years. So what's that pressure been like now that it's out?
Immense, I would say. I am also like a huge fan. I watch it every year, like on ABC Family / Freeform. I remember I bought it on DVD because there was like a weird, remember that weird time where like not everything was available online, but all the video stores had been closed. You like couldn't find stuff.
I remember, I shouldn't admit this, but I remember you ordering things from Netflix and you know how they would come in the mail, the DVDs, and certain obscure movies that you couldn't get anywhere else. I would just mark that it never came. I hope I don't get in trouble from Netflix, but you would just mark on the form online that said like it didn't come, and then you get to keep the DVD forever, which is essentially stealing. And I'm sorry about that, but sometimes you just need your hocus pocus fix.
Yeah, you just need it. And look, Netflix is like a little hard up for cash. They might come for you now.
We'll have to edit that out of this episode. Disney sometimes doesn't let villains just be villainous. You know, oftentimes if you look at a movie like Maleficent or something, they try to make us feel empathy for these villains. And that was, I think, my favorite part of Hocus Pocus 2. And I don't think for every character it needs to not just be a villain. Sometimes I think they should just be villainous, but I thought it was just such a beautiful moment. And it just tied everything together.
That actually reminds me of one thing that I would like to clear up, because I agree. Like, I totally hear the criticism about I feel the same way where I'm just like, why can't villains just be wonderful villains? Like, do we have to empathize with literally everybody? And I feel like for the Sanderson sisters, I feel like they do lend themselves to empathy just because like we love them so much and like they're the best and they're just so funny and charming. And I feel like the reason that the movie has so much staying power like is them. And it felt like a fun way to kind of like nod to the fans who love the Sanderson sisters. It's just like there's a reason that you love them, and it's because they love each other, and they're these like weird you know, three weirdos who just only have each other. So there's that. But then I also feel like I don't think that, like, I've seen some people like complaining that like Winifred was redeemed and that we're supposed to just like forget that she has killed children. And I don't think she's redeemed. I think she just has this one thing that we like about her, which is that she's very loyal to her sisters. And like the prologue just is meant to show you like why the three of them are so bonded together and why Sarah and Mary will do anything for Winifred and like put up with all of her shit because she loves them more than anything and will do anything for them. And so I think you can have both feelings of being like, wow, these women are terrible. And like, they did just straight up murder a child in the first one and then try to murder a bunch more. And they're not good people and they do go to hell in the end, which is good. But they can still have like, you know, there's one still some moment. Good to them, yeah. Even if they're overall bad.
I love that.
Yeah.
So how did this job come about? How did you get the gig?
So it was truly just like through my agent. Like, I got an email that Disney was considering doing a sequel to Hocus Pocus. And they were like, would you be interested in meeting with them? And I could not respond fast enough. I was just like, yes, absolutely. I love Hocus Pocus. And at the time, like, I was also, because I'm such a fan, my immediate reaction was also like nervousness. Cause I was like, I don't want them to mess with it. And I felt so protective of Hocus Pocus in general, but I also love it so much. So I was like, I absolutely want to talk to them, but also like, are the women going to be in it?
They had to be in it. Cause wasn't there a time when Disney was thinking about maybe doing it without, I know that was a rumor where it was like, they were going to reboot it with just a totally new cast.
Yeah. They had talked about doing like, yeah, like a Disney Channel or like Freeform movie without them. And
disgusting.
Yeah. I know.
Unacceptable. So how did you decide then what legacy characters to bring back? Obviously, Billy's back. But then I thought Thora Birch was like attached at one point. And I don't know if this was your script, but I read a script like a long time ago. And I believe, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Thora supposed to play like the principal or guidance counselor?
Yeah, that was my script. Okay. Yeah, Danny was always like kind of in. It was like always levels with Danny where there were versions of the script where she was in it a lot. And then there were versions where she was just in like one scene and then had a brief cameo later. And then we ultimately, because of her schedule, it was like, we can maybe only get her for one day. So then our last ditch effort was like, here's this version where she literally is just there for 1 second. And then we couldn't make that work, which was very sad.
And it might have been disappointing, I think, if we only got like a smidgen of her, because I think we would have wanted more.
I think that's like always, I feel like that was what we really struggled with Max and Allison too, where it's like, if you bring them back, like you want them to really be a part of it and like do something. Like you don't want them to just kind of like cross through and be like, yikes. Like, so that was always hard of trying to be like, okay, how do we balance, if we are going to bring back legacy characters, like balancing them with new characters. And so, yeah, it ultimately wound up that we didn't have any of them, but
who would you have most wanted back out of all of the other people who weren't able to make it for this round?
I was so sad when we couldn't have Danny, because to me, Danny is like the beating heart of the first one, her and Binks. And we talked about Binks a lot too, but ultimately felt like he has such an emotional, like nice, beautiful ending. And it felt almost like disrespectful to that, to be like, and now he's back. Right. So that was like kind of sad. But honestly, not just because they're on your shirt, I love Jay and Ice. Right.
For listeners, I'm wearing a shirt with Jay and Ice from the original on it. If they won't be able to see it. But yeah, I know it must have been challenging, because of course there's an emotional connection to all of those characters. And I loved seeing Billy back. And of course, I don't believe there could have been a part two without the three women. So I was thrilled to have them, and then to have a new story, because I often find with reboots or sequels for movies that are much older, I feel like it's ultimately always disappointing when we just get a little cameo. So I actually like loved that, just sort of moved on, although it would have been nice to catch up with them. And then my sort of hope is that there's a part three, and then we get to bring in some of those other characters.
That's my hope as well. There was like a throwaway line that I think eventually fell out about how like Max and Allison live in California now, and that Danny is like a veterinarian somewhere. Oh, I like that. And I like that. So yeah, I'm definitely like very into the idea of bringing them back, or just even like seeing where they are now.
The movie ends with, spoiler alert, there's a post-credit scene, and there's an implication that there's another black flame candle. And I've seen some interviews with, I think, like Bette Midler and some people, and everyone seems to have a different idea of like if that was alluding to another one, or if that was just a little kind of fun in joke. What was your take as the writer? Were you setting up a sequel? Did you have an idea beyond that?
I'm like, how do I answer this?
Is Disney going to get mad at you?
Yeah. That was Anne Fletcher's. She really like put that together.
The director.
And so the director. So I have like some ideas, and she and I had talked about it. But yeah, that was very much like her idea of like wanting to end with this tease of something that could happen later. And yeah, we've definitely had conversations. I mean, as soon as I was pitching the sequel and like building out the prologue and like the young Sandersons, I had so many ideas for other stories that could be told in that time period and in our modern time period. So I feel like there's a lot of things to explore for a third one.
Okay, wait. So you mentioned the earlier period, and I loved that scene at the beginning with the young Sanderson sisters. And Disney Plus is doing so many interesting things. The Santa Claus movies, which I love those movies, they're doing a series now. And so is that an idea, like doing some sort of series version? I think I've seen that online, people speculating maybe there could be like a young Sanderson series. What would ultimately your ideal choice as even just a fan of this world for the future of this franchise?
I mean, I love the idea of doing like a series or another movie that's like primarily in the 1600s. I feel like it's just such a fun, their version of it, like the Hocus Pocus version of it, is so fun and fun to play with. And I feel like it's just so fun to see those characters like growing up and like how they became who they are. So that's like my favorite area, is like playing with puritanical witchcraft.
Oh, I love that. I also like am obsessed with the thou and thoust and like that kind of language. It's like really, it's silly and fun. Talk to me about the input of the three women, Kathy, Bette, and SJP. What did they come into the script with? What did they talk to you about that they wanted, or what were their inputs into this whole project?
So it was interesting because I had done like multiple versions of the script. And then when they came on board, they liked what was there and then just had like some ideas of things to add or things to sort of like reconfigure. And like truly one of the coolest days of my life was when they were like, Bet wants to Zoom with you because she has like thoughts on her dialogue. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm dying.
Amazing.
It was incredible.
And what were her thoughts on the dialogue? I need to know, like, what was her one thing she said?
I was mortified by this, honestly, because I had Googled this and I thought I had done like a sufficient research so that I was correct. But she pointed out that there were times where I was using the wrong thou and thee and thy. She was like, these are incorrect. These are incorrect. And you've got to go back and look at them. And I was like, oh my God, you're 100% right. So that was mortifying. And then she had like a couple like jokes for Winifred that were very delightful that she wanted to add in. And the biggest thing that she had was she was like, they need to have a musical number immediately.
I love that. You know, yeah. I wasn't on board with that first musical number at first. And then there was such like clever editing where it was like SJP popped up and it was a kind of scary moment. And Kathy Najimy. And I was like, oh my God, I love this. So it won me over so quickly. And I wondered with those musical numbers, how did you all decide what to do? Because there must have been endless possibilities. Was there ever a discussion to reprise I Put a Spell on You, which I think would have been blasphemous, but I'm sure that was a discussion, right?
That was not a discussion that I was a part of. It's so crazy. Like when I first got hired, like I was literally only talking to just these two Disney executives, Jess Virtue and Rachel Young, who are both like huge Hocus Pocus fans. And so it was like the three of us and it felt very like secretive. And then as it kept going further and further, it just like grew and grew and grew. And it was so cool to just bring more and more people on board. And Disney has like a whole music department, obviously. And so the music conversations, like I was never really a part of. I just like eventually heard both songs and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like right before we were about to start shooting. But yeah, I think everyone really felt like I Put a Spell on You as untouchable. I mean, it's so great.
I know you might not know the answer to this because this is probably just some other crazy department over at Disney. But did you hear from anyone about like why we don't have the first I Put a Spell on You on streaming? Like what the fuck?
John. I know. Wait, I should ask about that because I've been wondering that because yeah, you can't find it anywhere.
No, please ask anybody. I've been trying to figure this out. I know there must have been some sort of music rights issue with the original. Yeah. And it's similar to Bette's other First Wives Club. I think it might have been a part of her recording contracts at the time because First Wives Club has, of course, You Don't Own Me, which is like amazing. And that's also not available on streaming. And it's high time that we figure this out. Like, I don't care who has to loosen up the purse strings, like figure it out, Disney, and get it on streaming because a Halloween party would be, everyone would play it during a Halloween party. Like you'd get so much streaming out of it. Okay. So talk to me about the cat in the part three or moving on the cat's. I forget. What's the cat's name in part two?
Cobweb,
yes. Cobweb's going to speak in part two, right? He's going to have some sort of soul. Am I wrong on that? Or part three? What was your take on Cobweb? Tell me.
So Cobweb was also like, Anne Fletcher came in and was like, there needs to be a cat in this movie. And so Cobweb got added and like we cast this cat that truly was like so beautiful and also just like very professional. I was like, this cat is a great actor. And one joke that I just came up with too late. Like everyone was like, people liked it and we wanted to do it, but we had already started shooting and it was just going to be like too hard. But that you reveal that Cobweb is John Pritchett from the opening and that, like that every black cat in Salem is someone that wronged the Sanderson sisters and that they're just like everywhere. So that's an idea that I feel like we should explore in a third one if there is one.
The movie so well. Like I think it was number one on streaming and I know everybody watched it. Like so many people I know watched and loved it with their kids or even adults like myself who watched it without kids. So have you heard anything about a future installment?
There have been some conversations, just like very preliminary. But yeah, it was like, was so incredible to see that it did so well, because I love Hocus Pocus so much. And I know that so many people love it so much. And it really felt so affirming to just be like, oh yeah, like people love this. And like, these are my people. Like, I just felt so like seen. It was great.
I had a friend of mine, Aaron, wrote a book called Hocus Pocus in Focus, which people can check out. It's about sort of the legacy of this movie, of the original. And it's been so amazing to watch how the fan base has grown over the years. And I think I'm not sure if we're around the same age, but I think for people my age, I didn't think that it would ever become this big thing, because it wasn't a box office success. It came out in the summertime, even though it's a Halloween movie, and it just kept growing and growing. And then there started to become merchandise for it. And even you would go to the Spirit Halloween and see merchandise for it. And now to see it have this hugely successful sequel, I think it's very satisfying. And it must have just been also very daunting for you as the writer, because there's no real, it's hard to win in a situation like that, because people have such an attachment to the original. And I thought it was really, truly wonderfully done. I just thought it was great. And knowing about how much pressure there must have been as a Disney project, there's oftentimes so many voices that you're trying to adhere to.
I feel like Hocus Pocus is just so special. Like, I've been thinking about kind of like a lot about why people are so attached to it and like why it has lasted so long. And I feel like it really is that it just feels like this really weird, specific, silly, campy, spooky, fun thing about these like ridiculous, iconic women. And I think like people who feel like a little bit on the outskirts of wherever they are, like whatever their situation is, it feels like Hocus Pocus was like a little secret thing that was like just for us, like for these little outcasts. And like, I think that's why people like really, really connected to it. And that's definitely why I feel like I connected to it. Like, I was such a weird little kid and I loved Halloween. And I just was like a weird little writer who just wanted to like be alone and write scary stories. And I like had a crush on Billy, a zombie. Like, it's just like, I was a little freak and I loved Hocus Pocus so much. And I feel like that was such a great part of like creating the sequel, was that you just kept finding more and more people who are so excited to work on it because they loved it so much and it meant so much to them. And I feel like you can really feel like the love for the for like Hocus Pocus and those characters, like in the sequel too.
The 90s movies too, I feel like there was an oddness to them. And we often talk about with streaming services, how these movies are made almost by committee. And so the movies all feel like they're in this blueprint. And certainly with superhero movies, we see the blueprint works, obviously, but oftentimes the movies we get tend to be similar to each other. And I think if looking back on movies to the 90s, they're just a little quirkier, a little weirder, and they took some chances that I think studios maybe don't take as much anymore. And so I think watching that original, there's so many weird things there that wouldn't today be even allowed in a Disney movie. And I was surprised even in part two when you are using the word virgin, because I was like, oh, Disney, I would have thought they would have been like, no, we can't use the word virgin. We can allude to it or something. But the original has all that virgin talk, yabos, and like just sort of quirky, weird stuff that I feel like wouldn't, I don't know that it would get made today.
I know. It's like horny too, in a way. Like, it's just like, I think that's also part of it. It's like kids were watching it and just being like, this feels adult, but it's like still accessible.
What's your take on did Max and Allison have sex in the first one? That one scene where they're like at the house. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Wait, this is so crazy. I never thought that at all, but you're now the second person to ask me about it on a podcast.
I just rewatched it. And that was the first time I ever looked at it. And I was like, wait a minute. But it ends sort of in Max and Danny's house. The parents are away and we think the witches are done. And then they wake up and it's like, I feel like they're alluding to that, but maybe I'm totally wrong.
I mean, I got to watch it again. I never thought that literally ever once, but then yeah, someone else was like, they definitely had sex in that moment. They're like under a blanket. I was like, what?
I think they did. Is there anything you want to clear up about the second one? Like, was there anything out there? There's one controversy that's going around about the second one with the Penny Marshall scene, which I love Penny, of course, from the first one. In the second one, it's on a screen. These two men are watching it. And people are saying, what does that mean? But I think it was just sort of like a little Easter egg. But correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think it was just meant to be like a fun little wink to the first one. Yeah.
I loved that scene in the first one. You want to let me know when we're doing the third one? Because I need it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm literally like, I'll like drop everything. Like, I love Hocus Pocus so much. And it was so fun. And I'm just like, let's hustle and get the third one out for next Halloween. I mean,
I'm a little worried that Kathy Najimy doesn't want to do it because she has mentioned in interviews that she's like, oh, it could be animated. I'm like, Kath, we need you there. We need you all showing up. And Bette seems to be pretty on board with it. Even SJP is like, I'll do whatever Bette Midler tells me to. But yeah. Kathy in interviews, and I know she doesn't, I don't think Kathy like works a, you know, I think she's selective with her stuff. And I'm worried about it, Jen.
I mean, I think they all, like, they love those characters so much. Like, that was when they all came on board and, you know, they had, like, thoughts on the script and, like, wanted to contribute to the story and stuff. Like, Kathy really, like, loves Mary so much. And she had all of these lines that she wanted to say. And there were all these like callbacks to the original that she remembered really intensely that she wanted to put in because she just like that character is like in her bones. So I feel like she would come back, but okay. I don't know.
I mean, everyone with the money, you know, you show people the money, they'll come back. So I need Disney to loosen up the purse strings and get the gals back together because we can't, we need them back. Jen, this was so fun. Wait, just real quickly, because I want to make sure because I don't want Hocus Pocus fans to yell at me. So did you, I know you said there was a scheduling issue with Thora Birch, but with Allison and Max, and forgive me, I don't remember their names. Was that a scheduling issue or was that like a story thing where you just decided this doesn't make sense?
It was more of a story thing, like, because it was just that thing of not wanting to bring them back just to sort of see them, but then do a disservice to their characters by having them not help or like be along for the ride. And so it just felt like it can't be a movie that's about these teen girls and their friendship and also Max and Allison. But I mean, I love Max and Allison.
So the door's open.
That's the Shaw. So the door's open. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Jen, thank you so much for taking the time. Where can people find you on social media and all of that good stuff?
I'm on Instagram at Jen_D'Angelo and I'm not on Twitter because it was making me too sad, but
sure. Do you have a favorite Mariah Carey song, Jen? I ask all my guests their favorite Mariah song and also if they were choosing for People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive, who would you choose?
Oh my gosh. Who would I choose for Sexiest Man Alive? I can't believe I wasn't prepared for this question.
Well, how about we make it specific to Hocus Pocus in the Hocus Pocus universe? Who is the sexiest? Then
it's Billy Butcherson.
I was happy he was back.
I love Billy. Like, I truly, when he came on set in full makeup, I teared up. I was so giddy. I felt like someone who won a contest. I was like, it's Billy.
Yeah. And he was just as, lively and wonderful as before. Yeah. Jen, favorite Mariah song? Last question.
I mean, I feel so basic, but it might just be All I Want for Christmas Is You. I love it so much.
Live your truth, Jen. Live your truth. thank you so much for taking the time. And thank you for Hocus Pocus 2. And for everyone listening, check out Hocus Pocus 2 on Disney Plus right now. Watch it for the holidays. I already watched it twice and I cried at the end of that speech that Bette gives at the end. Like, I literally cried.
She's incredible. Like, she's amazing.
Jen, thank you for taking the time and congratulations on the success of Hocus Pocus 2. And thank you for making it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you do next. I love decorating the house and getting furniture, but sometimes it could be overwhelming to design a space. And so luckily, I'm here to tell you about a company called Cozy. Now, Cozy is fantastic, a North American company that thoughtfully designs furniture made for modern living. Now, Cozy strives to provide the best furniture shopping experience with elegant, super high quality products, plus fast delivery and easy assembly, which is really important to me because I do not like putting together furniture. So the easier, the better for me. Now, Cozy offers beautiful, customizable sofas and sectionals that are made to adapt in time. This means customers can add seats to the sofas over time. Maybe if you're extending your family, you might want more space on the couch. Cozy also offers a great range of coffee tables, washable rugs, wall shelving, credenzas, TV stands, and accessories. So much. It's thoughtfully designed furniture made for modern living. There's an outdoor sofa and tables collection that is fantastic. It's called the Mistral. So you can choose the perfect sofa configuration for your outdoor setup. Cozy also opened its first retail space on Queen Street in Toronto to push the experience to the next level and allow customers to engage physically with the products. So transform your living space today with Cozy. Visit cozy.com, spelled C-O-Z-E-Y, to start customizing your furniture today. Again, that's Cozy, C-O-Z-E-Y.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.